Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is February 6th, 2016, and this is episode 102, GameBuoy's Stupid Bowl 2016, or The Wacky World of Sports Games, Part 1. Welcome, once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're taking a look at some of our favorite non-traditional sports games in honor of the Super Bowl.
Superb Owl?
The Superb Owl. It's kind of all anyone can talk about here in the Bay Area, and we figured, let's stop fighting. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. DJ Slaggy Slag, you ready to kick us off here?
Yeah, so we have some good news in the Umihara Kawase saga. We reported a couple weeks ago that unfortunately the original publisher Agatsuma Entertainment had gone into bankruptcy, and the Umihara Kawase games had been pulled from Steam shortly after just getting their US releases. There is some good news though. The Japanese company Dejika is going to be bringing them back. And so please look forward to that. It was supposed to be right around the end of January, on January 28th. It did miss that deadline. It did miss that target date, but it's still going to be coming. So that's great news for those who wanted to pick this up on PC.
Fantastic. You know, I'm a big fan of the Umihara Kawase games. And I'm really, really excited to see that they're going to continue being available. We also have word here that Five Nights at Freddy's RPG, the Five Nights at Freddy's World, has been pulled off of Steam. We discussed previously how it had launched early on Steam, which Scott Cathon, its developer, is sort of known for. Unfortunately, the game ended up releasing with a lot of bugs, a lot of features straight up broken, and resultant, its developer apologized for rushing the game and pulled it off Steam. So it will be re-released in the future, but you know, at the moment, it is unavailable for purchase.
That's a bummer.
We also got word that Smash Brothers for Wii U and 3DS would be getting their final pieces of DLC on Wednesday, February 3rd. That, of course, is Bayonetta and Corrin as playable characters. And we have, you know, obviously past February 3rd, these characters are available now. We both here in studio have played as these characters. Slaggy, I know you've used both Bayo and Corrin. What do you think of them?
I think they're great. They both took a little getting used to, but I think they're both really solid, a lot of fun to play, and I'm looking forward to getting to know them a little better.
Excellent. I would definitely agree with that. Corrin, in particular, is incredibly strong. Definitely, like, right in on jumping in with Corrin, I was able to do a lot of damage. Bayonetta has a little bit more of a learning curve, in my experience. There's a lot more technical stuff going on. But I'm actually super into Bayonetta, too. When things click right, it just feels so good.
Yeah.
We also have some new gameplay footage from Final Fantasy XV.
It looks so good.
Right? So this was actual gameplay footage, about 2.5 minutes of it. You know, it's funny because, you know, the game, as many of us guessed based on episode Dusuke, the demo for the game, it definitely plays more like an action game than what we typically think of Final Fantasy being. But something that Slaggy and I have discussed is, you know, who even necessarily says a Final Fantasy has to be anything? So I'm really excited. You know, I think the game is beautiful. The concept it displayed in this new gameplay demo were really fascinating and stuff that I definitely am looking forward to playing with myself. And it shouldn't be too much longer until I can do so, because the event where the release date will be revealed, uncovered, Final Fantasy 15, will be taking place at the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles on March 30th, 2016 at 7 p.m. PST.
I can only hope that the boys of Final Fantasy 15 will be debuting, like, I don't know, Zappos Couture line or something.
Quite excitedly, this is going to be live streamed, this whole event, and honestly, I would be shocked if we didn't do something special for the occasion, because Square Enix still says that Final 15 is coming out this year, and at this point, I want to believe. We also have word here that Killer Instinct Season 3 will be kicking off with a returning fighter from Killer Instinct 2. This is the classic East Asian martial artist Kim Woo.
Yes.
This, of course, joins in with the other characters we already know about. Tusk, Battletoads is Rash, Gargos. So definitely a lot of really exciting stuff going on in the world of Killer Instinct right now.
We got confirmation via the European demo for Bravely Second and Lair that the Tomahawk class from the Japanese release of the game is going to be replaced by the Hawkeye class, which we had seen with some leaked images of a little cowgirl. And so that is indeed true. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it when this was just, I believe, just a rumor, you know, a rumor has it.
Exactly so.
But, you know, I think the change is positive. And, you know, I'm just excited to get my hands on the game.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the TLDR here, of course, is that they are changing a stereotypical, like, Native American character to have, like, a cowboy theme. And while there might be, you know, some problematic issues with replacing a Native American with a cowboy, at the same time, of these two classes, I know which one I would rather have a stereotypical representation of in the game, and it is definitely the one that they're going with here.
Right. Okay, I don't know if you heard this, Captain Spike, but outside the SS Game Buoy, some girls were just like, woo!
That's sporting weekend. There's a new Beyonce song tonight.
No, but I'm just going to pretend that they were cheering for the change to the Hawkeye class.
I want to believe.
And something funny is that after we talked about Star Wars, we were like, what's up with all the Star Wars games? We're like, where are the Force Awakens games? And we got an announcement of LEGO Star Wars The Force Awakens from Warner Brothers and Telltale Games coming on June 28th.
And, you know, even funnier is that when we were discussing LEGO Star Wars, we were like, hey, what about LEGO Force Awakens? Well, now we know.
Can I make LEGO Finn and LEGO Poe kiss each other?
I sure hope so.
So we have some release dates, don't we?
Oh, we sure do.
Danganronpa for Steam is going to be coming February 18th.
Exciting.
And Final Fantasy Adventure, aka Adventures of Mana, is now available on iOS and Android.
You know, it's we normally don't do like release date news for games that have already come out. But
it's
in
Adventures
this case,
of Mana.
Well, exactly. And, you know, Square Enix has been very straightforward that they would like to remake all of the Seiken Densetsu games using this game engine, but they need to see the sales in order to do that. So if you're interested in this, if you're interested in remakes of Seiken Densetsu 2 and Seiken Densetsu 3, I would definitely recommend supporting this release. We don't at this time have any word of the Vita version making its way stateside, but
Vita version making its way stateside, that's cute.
But we will talk about that a little later. For now, though, let's move on to some news.
News. Oh my god, news.
Well, first up here, we have some news that EA is radically changing the way that they handle their presence at E3.
Wait, it's February and we're already getting E3 news?
Yeah, well, you know, this
It's not even Valentine's Day yet. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, actually, though, this is about the time that we start hearing from all of the big companies what they plan on doing for E3. And EA, in a big way, is almost kind of skipping E3 this year. They're going to be doing their own public events in London and Los Angeles, where E3 is hosted.
So kind of pulling a Nintendo.
Well, exactly, you know. And it's funny because, you know, I think Nintendo is sort of ahead of the curve here on realizing that maybe E3 isn't as valuable as everyone seems to think. So the event is going to be called EA Play, and it's going to run from June 12th to June 14th at the Club Nokia in Los Angeles. There will also be a one-day event on June 12th at the Mermaid Event Center in London.
Way cooler name, by the way, than Club Nokia.
Oh, it sure is. There will be a press event, like, on stage. Presumably, it will be live-streamed. And we're expecting news and possibly trailers for stuff like Mass Effect Andromeda, the upcoming Star Wars open-world RPG.
Yes!
So this press conference is going to be held on Monday. It'll be at the Los Angeles event for people who plan on attending personally. And we will definitely be talking more about this as we get closer to E3. I think we're starting to see a little bit of a sea change here.
Yeah, you know, it'd be great if they did the sports one is just a separate presentation. Ironic, because this is our sports episode.
All right. We also have word that Bethesda is going to repeat what they did last year and do another keynote press event presentation on June 12th, so that is Sunday, June 12th, at 7 p.m. It will be live streamed, and, you know, we're expecting to hear, you know, Fallout stuff. We're expecting to hear a lot about Doom this year. There will probably be a lot of Doom stuff. Definitely going to be some Elder Scrolls going on.
It feels like it was just yesterday that we were watching that, and it's like, oh my god, Fallout 4.
Right, and now it's out, and we're all disappointed and ready for more.
It's a good thing I held off on that.
We also have some really fascinating news here. The developers over at Volition Software, you're probably familiar with Volition Software as the studio behind the Saints Row series. You know, they were, for a time, developing a PSP game in the Saints Row universe. It was originally going to be a straight port of Saints Row 2, but it ended up, they experimented with it fairly wildly, and it turned into a standalone experience. But unfortunately, it never really reached anything that they wanted to release. So the reason why we're talking about all of this is that Volition did something, you know, quite remarkable, and actually released the PSP ISO for this in conjunction with Unseen 64. Unseen 64, which we've mentioned previously, is a website that archives and reports on canceled video games or like changed content within games that were released. It's one of my favorite sites. And, you know, if you want to play this unreleased, unfinished Saints Row game for PSP, Saints Row Undercover, all you need to do is head over to Unseen 64, grab a PSP emulator, or even, as I understand, a modded PSP, and it'll still play on that.
Nice.
And you can have a go at something that, honestly, in most cases, we never get to see or even hear a whole lot about. So this is really exciting to someone like me who's really interested in almost like the conservation of games.
Totally. We have the official Evo 2016 lineup. It's getting to be that time too, and it's a pretty good lineup, I think. We have Street Fighter V, Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Pokken Tournament, Super Smash Bros. For Wii U, Super Smash Bros. Melee, Killer Instinct, Mortal Kombat X, and Tekken 7
Faded Retribution.
Faded Retribution.
How do you feel about this lineup?
I think it's great. I mean, you know, I think some people are complaining about, oh, too much Nintendo, but I mean, you know, I haven't seen a lot of Pokken Tournament except, you know, from video footage, but I'm sure it'll be fun to watch. I always am down for Smash, Street Fighter, Guilty Gear. I mean, I like watching these games. Even Tekken is fun to watch if there's nothing else to do, so.
You shady lady.
I mean, I think it's going to be a good lineup. Obviously, totally here for Smash, but also looking forward to everything else.
Excellent. We also have word here that Capcom is working on a Mario Party arcade game called Mario Party Mysterious Challenge World. This is being developed for up to 6 players, and it will be unveiled at the Japan Amusement Expo on February 19th at the Makuhari Messe Center in Chiba, Japan. It's expected to launch wide in Japanese arcades this summer, and this is definitely the kind of thing you'll be hearing more about from us, especially if, as I'm sort of inclined to expect, it gets brought over stateside by
Dave and Buster's,
or even Round 1, now that Round 1 is getting their feet in the water.
Even though when we went to Dave and Buster's with Salker a couple weeks back, it was just a mess. It was a Saturday night, though, so that was on us.
We also have some pretty cool news here that Square Enix, at that same event, is going to be showing a Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy arcade game.
What?
Yeah, so, you know, it looks really cute already. We have some screenshots. It really looks like they've adapted Theater Rhythm to work on a large screen platform, which sort of begs the question, how long is it going to be until we get Theater Rhythm on consoles? Because at this point, if they're this far, can't be that much harder to port, you know, one step further.
Right.
We also have some incredibly surprising but exciting news coming out of Sega. The turn-based dungeon crawler RPG cult hit Seventh Dragon 3, code VFD, will be releasing in North America this summer. This is the first of the Seventh Dragon games to release anywhere outside of Japan, and quite excitedly, you know, this game actually got fairly positive reviews upon release in Japan, so this is, to me, definitely something to be excited about.
And we've got some financial results from Nintendo's latest financial report. This is for April through December 2015, and news is good, despite what some people might say. Sales are down by 3.9%, but profits are up 34.4%.
Yeah, and you know, to me, this is super, super, super exciting, largely because if you really stop and look at these numbers and think about what they mean, like, we have Splatoon over the 4 million mark.
That's huge. It's the fifth best-selling Wii U game now.
Mario Maker at 3.3 million. Even Yoshi's Woolly World has broken the million mark. It's at almost 1.5 million. So, you know, a lot of these games that people had previously thought were being sent to die are actually selling incredibly well.
I was surprised Happy Home Designers sold almost 3 million.
Well, I'm not. I mean, Animal Crossing is huge in Japan.
Yeah, but
the amiibo cards for Animal Crossing are destroying sales charts. In fact, that was a part of these numbers, but I don't have the exact figures for the amiibo cards in front of me. I'd have to go back to Nintendo's financial reports rather than my notes, and I'm not going to do that right this moment.
Something I thought was pretty spectacular is Mario Kart 7 selling 1.33 million in that period last year. So, I mean, still going strong.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and in that period, Smash 3DS moved more than a million. Mario Kart 8 for Wii U moved another 2 million units. So, yeah, Nintendo doing really well. And you look at a game like Splatoon, like, dude, Splatoon on the Wii U ended up outselling The Order 1660 whatever and Bloodborne combined. Like, the two biggest PS4 exclusives combined could not outsell Splatoon.
Splatoon NX, watch out for it.
Yeah. Splatoon is definitely coming back. This is the birth of a franchise. It's the birth of a new Nintendo pillar IP. And all of the haters who say Nintendo never do anything, well, Splatoon, bro.
And, you know, you were talking about those amiibo cards, and I was looking here. I thought I was looking at these numbers mixed up. The amiibo figures sold 20.5 million units. The amiibo cards sold 21.5 million units. Dang!
Yeah, that's insane. So, either way, I know there's a lot of doom and gloom about Nintendo's status, but rest assured, they're doing well for themselves. Sly, unless you have anything else to say about that, though, I'd like to start up a new segment we're doing.
Oh, are we going to get caught in something?
That is a good way to put it. So, welcome to You'll Get Caught Up in a Kickstarter.
Kickstarter!
Here, we're going to talk every week about sort of some of the ongoing trials, tribulations, woes, and wows of Kickstarter.
Nice.
Unfortunately, this week we have two downer notes. They're both pretty depressing, but, you know, some weeks we will have positive, I promise. So just stick with us, please. This first one, though, is something that's super sad to me. This was the Kickstarter for Ant Simulator. Game developer Eric Tereshinsky, unfortunately, has had to cancel the game and is going to be issuing refunds to everyone who paid for the beta or did, like, the pre-order for Ant Simulator.
That's a bummer.
Unfortunately, you know, he alleges that his two business partners, who I guess were, like, his childhood friends, ended up running away with the company's money and spending it on liquor, restaurants, bars, and strippers.
What?
You know, it's very unfortunate stuff. His business partners, who were, you know, like I said, his two lifelong buddies that ended up going to business school, were basically saying that these were normal and reasonable business costs, you know, entertaining clients or whatever, taking employees out. But, you know, Mr. Tereshinsky is just like, you know, this isn't what this money was for. He feels that they embezzled it, and he just wants to call the whole thing off, give up on Ant Simulator, and start working on a new game somewhere else, and hopefully, you know, this sad state of affairs won't be held against him in the future. And to that, you know, I'm actually on his side here. I think this whole situation sucks. I think going into business with your lifelong friends is probably a poor idea.
Hey.
I met you when I was like 20. You're not my lifelong friend.
Hey. You know, what makes this even more of a mess is that the business partners are saying he's full of shit. So...
Well, yeah, they're saying that, you know, it was all reasonable operating expenses. And to me, I don't want to see anyone go to jail over this. I don't want to see anyone arrested. I hope they can just be friends. And I hope this project just gets killed and relieves everyone of all of the, you know, pain and upset feelings they're going through right now.
So if strippers are part of a normal operating cost, then where is our Game Buoy Magic Mike?
Let me see what I can find for you. If any listeners want to come over and be Slagkick's Magic Mike stand-in, you know, just let me know. We can work something out.
So, Unsung Story is looking like it's going to be an Unsung Story.
Yeah. There has been a practically endless string of broken promises involving this game. It was kickstarted for over $500,000 by Playdeck. And we actually talked about this one here on the show. It's one I personally backed. I was very, very, very excited for it. It was meant to be like a revival of Final Fantasy Tactics style tactics games.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the developers at Playdeck updated the Kickstarter today, this afternoon, and said that for the sake of the financial strength of the company, they need to focus their resources on other projects that will get to market sooner, and that they hope to get back to development of Unsung Story at some point in time in the future. So I think that is lame as hell. I'm super mad about it. Unfortunately, not a whole lot is ever going to happen about it, and I think that really sucks. I'm definitely feeling burnt by Playdeck on this one.
Yeah, it's good thing that other tactics influence game is coming soon.
Zodiarcs. it's just fun to say.
Leave it to like Final Fantasy related stuff to like take a normal word like Zodiac and make it Zodiarcs.
And you know, it sounds silly, but like that actually makes me feel better about the game. Like that makes me feel like, okay, they get like silly naming conventions. It just feels appropriate.
Sorry, Unsung Story. Your story is over.
Oh, are you RuPaul right now? Because that was quality.
Can I get that as a audio clip, please?
Never going to happen.
Too bad. This is a podcast audio clip. Ah.
Unless you have anything else, though, I think it might be time to move on to some controversial news.
Controversial.
Oh my god.
So what's the tea?
Well, the first piece of juicy, juicy news is that last week, Nintendo turned off the Mario Maker servers in an emergency for maintenance. A Mario Kart maker by the name of Joseph, who requested specifically that his full name be kept private, talked to Kotaku about what this emergency maintenance was about. He had basically found a game-breaking glitch in the game that allowed you to take items into any other player's world online, which obviously, for a lot of the super challenging levels in Super Mario Maker, completely broke the game. So he contacted Nintendo about this, and he actually had to go quite roundabout in doing so. You know, he didn't want to post on Reddit about it. He didn't want to start reaching out to people on Gaff or 4chan, because he actually wanted this glitch to stay hidden if he could help it. So he actually friended someone from Nintendo on LinkedIn and contacted Nintendo on LinkedIn to say, like, hey, I found this glitch. I've been able to 100% effectively reproduce it. The few friends I've told about it can reproduce it. This is a major problem. And apparently that night he ended up, you know, the service ended up coming down. Interestingly, you know, he had actually uploaded a recording of it to YouTube. It was private so that only people with the link could view it. He sent the link to Nintendo, and Nintendo actually submitted it for a copyright infringement. So this boy that actually went out of his way to help Nintendo in like the most classy way possible actually kind of got kicked in the face, because those copyright infringement claims, you know, they burn you, they accumulate, and you don't want that. So it's kind of shady as heck about what Nintendo did. And it's also interesting that they were so hush-hush about what they were taking the servers down for. I find this whole story really fascinating. People are understandably up in arms about, hey, you know, Nintendo, you kind of did wrong by this kid. What do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, it's just kind of shady. They could have been a little more grateful about it.
Oh, also, the person that this guy Joseph wrote to was Nate Bildorf.
Yeah.
Who we've talked about quite a bit here on the show over the years.
Well, let's just hope that future similar... Well, let's hope there's not any more game-breaking glitches. Let's hope that if there are, they're handled a little bit more delicately.
Absolutely. There's also has been a minor kerfuffle. Jonathan Blow's long-awaited puzzle adventure game, The Witness, finally released on PlayStation 4 and PC after 8 years of development. Unfortunately, you know, there are hundreds of puzzles in this game, 500 in fact, and many of them involve colors. The problem is there's no kind of colorblind or hearing impaired accessibility options in the game. So if you are hearing impaired, which actually that applies to me, or colorblind, some of the puzzles are more difficult to impossible to solve. So that's definitely something that hopefully will get patched, like some accessibility options, subtitles for sounds, colorblind mode, because, you know, obviously there are colors you can use that colorblind people can still differentiate.
Right.
So I just really hope that Jonathan Blow hears this. A lot of people, obviously, who can't complete the game are pretty bummed. So I definitely hope that something is done about this.
Indeed.
And last, but certainly not least, Square Enix actually issued a statement concerning the Vita version of Adventures of Mana for non-Asian regions. Square Enix European branch actually asked people to start tweeting at them, to come onto their message boards and talk about it. They basically want to know, do people overseas want Adventures of Mana on Vita, in addition to iOS and Android devices? I obviously have tweeted at Square Enix America, I've tweeted at their overall account, and I've tweeted at the European account.
You tweeted the Japanese account.
No, well, that's what I meant when I said overall.
Oh, okay.
So I've definitely done my best, and hopefully everyone out there, you know, if you're listening to this, if you're interested in Mana, if you don't have a phone that you can play this game on, I would definitely say reach out and encourage them to bring this over to Vita. Obviously, this is the kind of game I'd prefer to be playing with a controller in the first place.
Yeah.
And I just also would like to see Vita support out there, so, you know, it'd be a good thing. Either way, this is something a lot of us are very excited about, we're all sort of buzzing with energy about, and I really hope it goes somewhere.
Yeah, it's nice to see that Square Enix is actually trying to reach out. This is not the Square Enix we have known in the past.
Yeah, it's really, really not. So we also have an article here that I would like to do as a smash. Now, something that's really interesting about this article is that this is actually like a news roundup on Kotaku.
It's basically their smash.
Right? And it's basically just links to a bunch of different stories that are worth reading.
Called Worth Reading.
Ah, that's funny. The thing is, like, as I'm reading this for inclusion on this in this show, I was really taken aback by the fact that, honestly, Kotaku put together a great list of articles worth reading here. I was really impressed. Like, there's an article about watching your own studio fall apart financially and go into bankruptcy even as you're still working for them. You know, there's a great piece by someone who ended up having some real issues with people online, with like bullying and stuff. It's a nice set of articles, and I'm really impressed by Kotaku putting this together, so I definitely wanted to shout out to them.
Well done Kotaku.
Alright, Slaggy, well, if you don't have anything else, it is time to talk about some stupid sports games.
Sports!
Alright, well, let's start the Stupid Bowl 2016.
Get your left sharks ready.
Right? First off, you know, the first game we're going to talk about here, of course, is the February 17th, 1994 Japanese release, Mega Man Soccer.
Oh boy, Rockman Soccer.
Yeah, you know, this came out for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, actually released in April of 1994, and something really interesting about this game, you know, I know we've talked about it before, we probably won't linger on it necessarily too long, but this game was released in an unfinished form.
Yep.
And it shows. The game, it had some control issues. They were not necessarily fantastic. You had some sort of really problematic issues with the game in terms of, there were UI elements that you could see but not interact with, like on the character select screen. You could see more characters off the side of the screen, like you could see, like, Dr. Wily's arm, but Dr. he wasn't Wily. Accessible. So, you know, the game is a little bit of a mess. Had fantastic music. It was supposed to have up to four players play simultaneous multiplayer play using the SNES multi-tap. It was supposed to have a closing credits sequence and a wrap-up to the story that starts the game.
Nah.
None of these things ended up happening. But, you know, despite the fact that GamePro, Game Players, Nintendo Power, VG and CE, which, you know, was the magazine that I really went to and trusted as my Bible practically, EGM, my other Bible. You know, they all sort of shat on this game. Pardon my French, but, you know, they all were basically on and on about how this game was pretty bad. But quite funny enough, in the modern age, it's actually kind of been reassessed.
Yeah, I know a couple of you mentioned it in your answer to our question of the week.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, a lot of people, we all agree, it doesn't necessarily control great. It's nonsensical. It has a story mode, and it literally doesn't have an ending to the story. But
okay.
It's...
You did this Metal Gear Solid 5, right?
Ah, shady shade. Whoa. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. It is a ton of fun. You select Rockman or some of the other mans from the Mega Man universe, Proto Man, Cut Man, etc. And you have a team of that robot playing soccer against a team of another robot. And where things get interesting is that each of these robots have their own unique, like, special shot that incorporates their special attack from the Mega Man games into their goal kick. I guess I don't know, like, their kick, whatever. So you end up with, like, Mega Man
Sports
doing, like,
ball.
You end up with Mega Man doing, like, a charged buster shot that encases the ball, and so if the goalie, like, gets in the way of it, he'll still take a hit, and sometimes the ball will still get through. And this adds, like, a really fun layer of strategy to the proceedings, because then it becomes not just a matter of the usual tenets of soccer, you know, responsiveness, you know, strategizing your sort of control of the play area and movement and keeping your players in formation, but you also have, like, this basically like an attack function, and it just adds a really interesting wrinkle to the proceedings. Something that's really interesting is that not interesting per se, is that the computer AI is awful. But this game can actually be a lot of fun with two players. I actually used to play it quite a bit after school with Seawolf Jason, who appeared on this show in our early days. Slaggy, what are your experiences with Rockman Soccer?
I always stayed away from it, but I recognize that it has its redeeming qualities.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, then let's move on to our next game. We want to talk about Cyber Stadium Series Base Wars.
Yeah, that was a Konami game published under their Ultra Games moniker, you know, to get around the 5 NES games only limitation that Nintendo imposed.
Yep, and this was released on the Nintendo Entertainment System on June 1st, 1991. And this is a game, you know, we're going to start off here talking about a couple of older games, because this style of, like, weirdo sports game used to be more common and popular than it is in the modern age.
Yeah, such as the premise of Base Wars, which the full title is Cyber Stadium Series Base Wars. It involves baseball team owners in the 24th century who, tired of paying their players outrageous salaries, decide to just build cyborg robots in the forms of androids, tanks, flying flybots, and motorcycles.
Yeah, and you know, this is a game that, to me, I feel is incredibly underappreciated. I never hear game scholars talking about this game. Retro gamers never seem like people are, like, super into Base Wars or whatever, but it's
music,
really cool.
Speaking of great music, the music in Base Wars is great. Super catchy.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think it's really cool, you know, that you get to, like, basically build your own robots. You can give them, you know, guns and swords. You can choose what kind of legs they have. So if they have, like, tank treads or cyborg, like, just legs, or if it's, like, a motorcycle, like wheels and stuff. And they all have different, like, effects on your game, because basically you play the game sort of like regular baseball, but anytime there's, like, a close call on base, you end up in almost like a fighting game style mode where the runner and the tagger are, like, fighting in side view, like Street Fighter style. And if the runner loses the fight, they're out. If the tagger loses, then the runner is safe. It's just really, like,
such a silly concept.
It is. It's a really silly concept, but it's the kind of thing that, like, this probably shouldn't work, but it totally, totally does.
I mean, I know the answer, and it's Konami. That's my one word answer. But why is there not a Base Wars 2016?
Right, except it would have to be, like, Base Wars 2216.
Well, 2416. 2316, how do centuries work? It's one ahead. Yeah. Yeah. No, but Base Wars is a silly concept, but it, like, with things like some of the games we'll talk about later, like Rocket League, I'm surprised that we don't see more things like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the biggest reason we talk about games like this here on Game Buoy, you know.
Game Buoy.
Oh, okay, on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Is that, you know, stuff like this, these kinds of games, they slip through the cracks, but it is so much fun.
Say crack again.
Crack. Okay, so, you know, it's just like, for me, tomorrow, I guess I'm going to a Super Bowl party. I'm not really sure which one yet, but I'm going to see if I can't load up, like, my tablet or something with a ROM of Base Wars, because, you know, during the Super Bowl, everyone's going to be celebrating sports. And
isn't football kind of slow?
Yeah, like, I'm actually... Football is like the one game I just can't really get that into. I love baseball. I love hockey. I can actually really get into basketball, but football
this
is just
a sports movie.
It's just not my thing.
This isn't sports buoy.
but the point being, if you have an NES that works, I would definitely recommend you check out Base Wars. I think it's a really fun time. If you're into emulation
and
stuff,
You're
into emulation and stuff, I don't think anyone is ever going to make a dollar off of Base Wars again. I don't think you should feel too bad emulating it. It's worth playing.
Sorry to interrupt you. I was just trying to get one last burn on Konami. Back when they actually made games.
Ah, hey, they maybe, still make games.
Maybe we'll
They're
get Base
Chinko
Wars.
Now.
Maybe we'll get Base Wars Patchy Slot.
Ooh, I'd be into that.
Base Wars Patchy Slot Triple X.
Ah, erotic violence. All right. The next game I want to talk about here was released in North America on October 27th, 1989.
I believe that's the Japanese date.
Oh, well, it was released somewhere October 27th, 1989 by Culture Brain for the NES. Yes, this is Baseball Simulator 1.00.
So I think that's
I've always suspected that it's meant to be Baseball Simulator 1000.
Because in other countries, they use the decimal point as the thousands separator.
Well, other countries are super stupid. I don't really believe that, but, you know. The thing that's cool about Baseball Simulator 1000 is that it's, for me, it was like my first real experience with like an RPG style, like team manager game. So you had the ability to simulate and play through an entire 165 game season. You could create like a full custom team of your own. If you wanted, you could just play as like one of the pre-built teams, but obviously who wanted to do that? And all of your players would have like stats that you would have to manage. And you also had like super moves that were done almost like JRPG style. You would select them off a list, and for example, if you're like the batter and you used like your missile, then if an opposing fielder caught the ball, they would actually like get ejected and like flung into a wall and drop the ball. Or if you're a pitcher and you use like your fireball, you would have like a super fastball that would be impossible to hit. And it was really cool take on baseball. I played this before I played Base Wars, so at the time I had never played anything like this. Unfortunately, in playing it for preparation for this episode, it has not aged very well.
Aww.
Yeah. But I still really felt like it was worth mentioning because, again, you know, a lot of these games I feel like are being forgotten every day now, and I want to shine a light on them. And, you know, if you're interested in early Culture Brain stuff, because, you know, they have a very distinct creative touch on their games, this stuff like Flying Warriors, just really left of center design concepts. There was an SNES sequel brought to America as Super Baseball Simulator 1000, and that one has aged a little bit better, but I did not play it contemporaneously, so I didn't really feel comfortable including it in this episode. Slaggy, what is your experience with Baseball Simulator?
I have no experience with it, really. I looked up some Let's Plays. It did look pretty rough.
Girl, that really was a rough spot.
Yeah, but I mean, I appreciate like when you talk about it with like the stat management, and really sounds like a precursor to, I mean, like these sports management games that are super popular now.
Yeah. Well, then this next one that I want to talk about is one that I know is very well loved and remembered. This was released
EA
for the
sports title.
Well, it is. It was released on the Sega Genesis in 1993. It was designed using the Madden 93 game engine. You probably know what I'm talking about right now, but if you don't, it's Mutant League Football.
Mutant League Football!
It released in 1993. It did get a port to the PSP as a part of the EA EA Replay Collection on November 14th, 2006.
Cool. Wow. That was 10 years ago.
10 years ago. Holy mackerel. But it's actually, you know, this is a really cool game. You know, I have to say, honestly, those Madden engines, especially in the Genesis era, I actually thought were really phenomenal games.
Yeah.
And
they were solid.
There was a long period of time that, despite the fact that I didn't like watching football, I loved playing the Madden games
EA
back
Sports
then.
Is a thing because EA Sports was the thing.
Exactly. So this game, you know, it's pretty wild. You have these various teams of aliens or skeletons or robots,
skeletons,
trolls, superhumans, vampires and demons and stuff. And they're all basically playing football together for reasons that I don't really understand
to this day.
What
else are you going to do in a post-apocalyptic world?
Right? Apparently, the plot of the game, because it was a sports game with a plot, was that radiation had caused the human race to mutate and the dead to rise from the grave, you know, so kind of a Return of the Living Dead situation, it would seem. But what I really liked was that, you know, this game took the super solid Madden 93 engine and spiced it up, so you had things like landmines, fire pits that would open up, you'd end up like having, you know, huge chunks of the playfield get coated with ice and your characters would
start slip sliding
around. There'd be rubber where, like, and the ball would start bouncing like super high on that area. Characters could lose health and even die mid-match. You would get like special abilities like invisibility or jetpacks. You could even bribe the ref twice a game. It just brought like a whole layer from a mechanic standpoint. It brought like a whole layer of new options to engage your opponents with. And to me, you know, this was actually something that, even though I didn't have like necessarily a lot of friends when I was growing up, when I did have friends over, it was pretty common that we would play Mutant League Football. Slaggy, do you have any Mutant League Football memories?
I only played it with friends. I remember there was also Mutant League Hockey. I think it was just called Mutant League Hockey. I don't know if I had a, can't remember. Yeah, Mutant League Hockey.
Yeah, there was. There was also a basketball game in development, unfortunately got canceled. And there was a cartoon spinoff just called Mutant League that ran in 1994 to 1996.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, I never watched it, but I remember it being a thing because I remember seeing the Mutant League the movie at my local Blockbuster Video.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but I mean, these were solid. It was a very, like, I don't know, to me, I just remember it being a very typically Sega thing because, you know, Nintendo, we always think like, oh, Mario, cutesy, but then Sega Genesis had blood.
We're going to do football, but it's going to be with skeletons and demons.
It was like, yeah, Sega. So, I mean, Sega. I just remember it being funny, just really silly, and that's what the kind of the point is today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at that silly sports.
Well, this next one I want to talk about is a more modern release. This is iDarb.
iDarb.
Also known as It Draws a Red Box, developed by Other Ocean, and it's presently available on PC and Xbox One as a part of the ID at Xbox program.
Yes.
It released February 1st, 2015, and it was actually a Games with Gold game that month, which is actually where I downloaded it.
Also, Made in Oakland.
Made in Oakland, which is obviously right near the SS Game Buoy. Slaggy, why don't you talk a little bit about iDarb?
So iDarb is a kind of retro throwback platformer soccer-ish game. You can play as any variety of characters. There's like the Masters of the Universe from He-Man. There are the villains from Masters of the Universe. There's Way Forward characters. There are arcade cabinets. There are rare characters.
There are capybara characters.
There's copy characters. There are
Worms characters.
Worms characters. There are Double Fine characters. So just lots of crossover. And, you know, the folks over at Other Oceans are good friends with Double Fine, so, you know, they kind of got a boost from that. And the thing that's interesting about iDarb is it started out with a tweet from, you know, the developer saying, we're working on something, this program, here's the program, it draws a red box, what should we do with it? And then they just took all these ideas from Twitter, and it grew into this just very frantic, silly game where you are any variety. You could also be Rock Band instruments as players, by the way.
Like licensed by Harmonix.
Yeah, so just a really silly, frantic sort of game. Like I said, soccer-based, just because you're trying to get the ball into the goal, but, you know, just it's really silly. I feel like I'm not doing it justice here, but...
It's side view game, 2D, pixel arty. You have some goals. They're suspended in air. So you almost have almost like a Smash Brothers style control setup, although simplified. You have your jump, you have your double jump.
Like a tower fall, almost, sort of.
Or, yeah, a tower fall. That's a good analog as well.
Sportsy tower fall.
Sportsy tower fall. And so you end up sort of trying to, you know, grab the ball from your opponent, knock it into your goal area, protect your goal area. And, yeah, I mean, it's not any specific sport, but the design and concept is rooted in sort of a combination of basketball, soccer, football, and even, like, some influence from, like, pinball.
Yeah.
You get bonuses for bouncing the ball off of obstacles before getting into the goal area. It's a lot of fun. Tons of fun multiplayer. If you have an X1, I would definitely recommend you check it out.
Yeah, and even better, there's a halftime mode where you can play little mini games that are inspired by classic arcade games.
So you have like a game that's basically Frogger, you have a game that's basically Bomberman, you have a game that's basically Atari Combat,
Flappy Bird.
You have a game that's basically Flappy Bird. It's really cool. It's a really cute game.
Did we just consider Flappy Bird an arcade classic?
I guess so. Dear God, what is the world coming to?
Wacky Sports.
In a very similar note, though, we also want to call attention to Super Slam Dunk Touchdown.
Yeah, from Tipping Goat.
So this is a really amazing game. I played it for the first time just a month ago at
GX3, Everyone Games.
And it's really cool. You know, it basically, you take the field from like any number of sports, the goals from several sports, and players from several sports, throw them all into a can, shake it up, and pour it out. What you get is Super Slam Dunk Touchdown. Basically, you select what type of ball player you want to control, and you just want to use that character's play style to score points. Now, when I say score points, I mean that on each end of the game field, you have a goal net, like a soccer or hockey goal net, that has like two-pronged goal post, like football style, coming out of the top, and that has a basketball hoop on it. And so your goal is to either get the ball.
Why is this not a real sport, by the way?
Dude, right? So you either want to dunk or get the ball into the hoop, or get the ball to go through the goalposts, or get the ball into the goal. And if you're a baseball player, obviously you have a bat, and so you're trying to like use your bat to knock the ball into one of these things.
Maybe roller derby.
If you're roller derby, you're gonna, you know, elbow someone, pick up the ball and take it over. If you're a basketball player, you're probably going to try to dunk it. You're a football player, you're obviously going to try to tackle through dudes and get it in. It maybe do a kick. It's a really great concept. It is physics based, like with 3D a full-fledged 3D physics engine, despite the game having a 2D pixel art style.
And then you know there might just also... ends up
what was
oh,
that?
Go ahead.
It just ends up being a super fun experience. It apparently just released in final back on December 16th, but it had been in early access for some time before that.
Yeah, so go support them. Really great folks over at Tipping Goats. And it's just like in the spirit of these other games we're talking about, well, most of them, I don't know how silly Baseball Simulator 1000 was, but this game is super silly. You know, someone might start streaking across the field. There might be a Zamboni that comes onto the field.
Oh yeah, and we keep saying field, but like sometimes it's a soccer field, sometimes it's like a hockey ice rink, sometimes you're playing on pavement like it's a basketball court. And because of the way that the 3D physics simulation engine of this game works, all of these fields also subtly impact the controls of the game. So it's just a really incredible concept. It's to me a must play if you're even a little bit interested in these kinds of competitive style games.
Definitely.
So we want to turn the clock back a little bit once again and talk about the 1994 Super Nintendo Konami release, Tiny Toon Adventures Wacky Sports Challenge.
Would you say it's tiny, it's toony, and also a little bit loony?
Well, and this cartoony, they're invading your TV. So this was a game that supported the SNES multi-tap. It supported up to four simultaneous players. A player could choose to play as Buster, Babs Bunny, Plucky
Babs
Duck, Dizzy Devil, and I was all about Plucky Duck. And you would compete in various Olympic-style events. The cool thing about this game is that there were like seven or eight different events in this game based on what difficulty you were playing on, and it felt like a more inventive take on the Konami classic Track and Field.
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate.
So you would have some games where you had to like aim a reticle. You'd have some games where you'd have to like rhythmically tap A, B, 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 etc. But it was themed around, you know, the Tiny Toons characters doing like these really weird like bungee jumping, saucer throwing, obstacle course, chicken run. But mechanically, it was definitely a callback to the earlier arcade sports games and NES simulations of same. And to me, as a result, it's actually aged pretty well. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I was just going to say something else that's helped to age well is that visually, you know, it's pretty high quality. I always refer to it as Mode 7. I don't know if that's exactly right, but like
the bungee jumping game used Mode 7.
Yeah. And I was like, just going
that
back.
That sprite warping and stuff in real time, the scaling and everything, that's Mode 7.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Looks pretty, you know, good, great sprite work and stuff. And overall, I feel like the Tiny Toons games like were kind of pretty solid.
Yeah,
like,
I loved Treasure, I believe, did Buster Busts Loose, and that was a fantastic game, I felt.
Yeah, and even though this isn't Tiny Toon Movie, I think we talked about the Tiny Toon Adventures game.
I believe so.
On our Underappreciated Gems. A little side note that just made me LOL is that there was apparently also a Game Boy version, which I assume is probably not as good, but in Japan it was called Tiny Toon Adventures 3 Doki Doki Sports Festival. I just think that's a cute name.
Yeah, I might have to look into getting a copy of that. Either way, though, let's move on because we still have a handful of games to get through.
Yes,
here.
We do. This one's a big one.
Yeah. Do you want to start this one up?
This one is a game where you would think it would be soccer, except it is involving remote control cars. I'm, of course, talking about Rocket League from Psyonix. This is a PS4 and Windows game that was released on July 7th, 2015.
Although, as previously noted, an Xbox One port is due this month will have console-exclusive cars.
And so it was actually a sequel to the 2008 game Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket-Powered Battle Cars, which I didn't even know that until I learned more about Rocket League. Like, I had never heard of Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket-Powered Battle Cars.
Say it again.
Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket-Powered Battle Cars.
Okay, but phonetically, that's very pleasant. Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket-Powered Battle Cars. Go on.
So anyways, that was the PS3 game. And
PS4?
No, Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket-Powered Battle Cars was a PS3 game.
Oh, thank you for the correction.
Rocket League is a PS4, Windows, soon-to-be on Xbox One game, and you're basically using a little rocket-powered car that you're using to hit a very large ball, or you're just a very small car, or both, into a goal. So it's kind of like a demolition derby, but also a soccer game.
Yeah, and you know, it's really cool because the game is super physics-based, and as a result,
like,
you know...
physics-based games.
Well, I do. You know, the thing that I prefer about physics-based games that have actual, like, physics simulations rather than just like canned responses and animations is that first off, I feel like they end up being more skill based, but also things get a little more wild because, you know, it's not just, oh, if I hit this at this time, it's always going to go here. Like, there's a way more nuance in how your actions affect the environment around you. And as a result, I feel like it leads to more fun, emergent experiences. And Rocket League, to me, if you recall, you think back to when Rocket League first came out on PS4, all anyone could talk about was like Rocket League replays on you know, PS4. Kotaku, I feel like, was posting a new Rocket League replay every day, like, watch this incredible shot, oh my god. Cars have the ability to jump to hit the ball in the air, which makes a big deal. There are speed boosts, and all of these things obviously impact how you hit the ball and how it's gonna react due to the way the physics are simulated. So definitely, you know, I do definitely prefer when sports games have a real simulation simulations of these things rather than having everything be canned and, you know, done rote by, like, okay, if you hit this ball, this will happen, blah, 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 blah. I'm way more into crazy experiences like this. You know, it's why a Super Slam Dunk touchdown worked so well for me, and it's why Rocket League works so well for me, because of those awesome emergent experiences.
Yeah, and I remember being over at Seawolf Jason's, and his younger cousins or nieces and nephews just really having a blast with it. And I mean, it's something the whole family can enjoy. Ooh, this is Rocket League. We're having fun.
You and these Austin Powers references. It's 2016.
So, anything else about Rocket League, or shall we move on to something a little more diabolical?
Something diabolical, which is also a Bloodhound Gang song. Let's pretend I don't know that.
So, we are talking about Diabolical Pitch, which was called Codename D when it was in development. Hey.
This by Suda51, so I guess you could say he gave us the D.
Oh, why? Oh, boy. So, yes, this was a Grasshopper Manufacturer game, and it's a Kinect game. So basically, it is a pitching and catching shooter sort of thing. You basically are using the Kinect controls to throw baseballs at monsters, kind of like in an arcade style shooter, and then sometimes you'll have to catch the ball. It's just really silly, really wacky. I mean, kind of what you expect from Suda51 and Grasshopper. It was released on April 4th, 2012. This was an Xbox Live Arcade game.
Yeah, and you know, I obviously I'm a big fan of this game. I love Suda51. I like Kinect games, and so to me this game is just a lot of fun. You know, it's really silly and out there, but again, that's Suda's stock and trade.
Indeed. Well, Captain Spike, are we ready to talk about this next one?
Yeah, and
Do we need to give a disclaimer for this one?
I mean, the creators of this game had to. the game we were going to talk about now is the 2002 video game release published by Acclaim Entertainment, BMX Triple X.
BMX Triple X.
This was released for the Xbox, GameCube, and PlayStation 2. And while it is a BMX-based action sports title, which is apparently the designation for the subgenre of, like, extreme sports games, it's probably most well-known for its adult humor, foul language, and nudity.
Okay, it also had a really good soundtrack, though.
It had a fantastic soundtrack. Do you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, it had Taking Back Sunday, Newfound Glory, Green Day, 311. Oh boy, I'm really aging myself now. Motley Crue.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's like, at the time, you know, I was like, oh my god, 311, yes!
While you're playing a game that involves doing motocross tricks as a lady only wearing panties. Although in the PS2 version, she was covering up Diddy.
Yeah, you know, and there were like black censorship boxes, although it could be played uncensored on the GameCube and Xbox. On the PlayStation 2 version, there were censorship boxes. The game also had like live action video clips of actual bare-breasted strippers that were played for you as rewards for doing well in the game.
Oh boy, it's ridiculous that a game like this was released in 2002.
So the first thing that has to be said, though, is that as a game, the gameplay of this game was super, super tight.
Well, yeah, it was based on the Dave Mira Freestyle.
It was based on Dave Mira Freestyle BMX. Of course, I'm pouring out a 40 for Dave Mira right now.
Oh, gosh,
he unfortunately passed recently. But it's really funny, you know, Acclaim basically wanted to increase sales of the Dave Mira Freestyle BMX brand. Freestyle BMX was meant to be a competitor to the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater series.
Yeah.
It was designed very closely, patterned after that series, right down to even having like a fantastic soundtrack, much like Triple X does. But basically, Dave Mira heard about this and he was not having it at all. So he actually took Acclaim to court to say, you know, hey, they're making this game, they have my name all over it. I know they have a license contract with me or whatever, but I don't want my name on this game. And Acclaim was going to do it anyway. And the court ultimately agreed that Acclaim could release this game game, but they had to remove all of the Dave Mira stuff from it. But as I was saying, you know, as a game, it's actually fantastic. You know, obviously playing as, you know, a braless woman who's not wearing any top, to me, that's not a whole lot of, there's not a whole lot of appeal to that, even if Motley Crue Girls, Girls, Girls is playing in the background. But then you consider it actually had like play mechanics that I would say rivaled and maybe even topped the play mechanics of the early Tony Hawk's Pro Skater games. Things felt super tight. The combo system for tricks was really well designed and a lot of fun. It ended up being just a really fantastic game, which kind of sucks.
How could BMX XXX have ended up as a fantastic game?
Well, and that's the thing that sucks, is that because of
its problematic
that gimmick
content
and the problematic content, this game was definitely overlooked. Nobody talks about it now, but if somehow this game were released today, but without that content, I actually think people would respond to it really well, particularly given how strong people's feelings on the Tony Hawk games are even now. Just look at all the outrage Tony Hawk 5 faced when it released Super Busted and Jank just a few months ago. People want good extreme sports games, and I'm telling you, despite all odds, BMX XXX is a great extreme sports game.
My thing with BMX XXX is, yes, it is problematic, and I mean, acknowledging that is important, I think, but something for me, and I mean, maybe I have no right here, please call me out on this if you think I'm in the wrong here, but I think just something about the juxtaposition of like how ridiculous it is that topless ladies are doing extreme sports tricks on bikes with when there's like super
Saliva,
like
the band
Saliva. Yes. I was like Saliva or 311 playing in the background. Like, something about the juxtaposition of that. To refresh my memory, I loaded up a video on YouTube, and it was Eiffel 65's Blue. And, like, I mean, something about that just makes it so ridiculous that, you know, I mean, we continue to talk about these issues in gaming today with, you know, over-sexualization of women, but something about BMX XXX is like, nothing about it is sexy, and that doesn't change the fact that it's problematic, but I mean, it's
well, like, and you know,
you're a topless lady doing super tight, solid BMX tricks with a bitchin' soundtrack.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, you know, I'm sitting here like, oh, well, I didn't get anything out of the topless ladies, but no, it was camp as hell. I loved it. I found it to be a delight. While I do recognize it's problematic, at the same time, to me, the only thing that would actually be like, that I actually found offensive was like the topless real life videos.
Yeah, we don't need any of that, like,
videos.
Miss Nude Roll 96 stuff, yeah.
Right? But the actual game, it was just so silly because again, like you say, the juxtaposition between you have these sexualized ladies, but they're doing like incredible, like world pro level tricks and stuff and combos, and it's just like, okay, this is hilarious. This is to me like every bad movie I've ever seen rolled into an extreme sports game. I would still play this today if I still had my copy of it. I would play it tonight if
you know
I still
what?
Had my copy.
Bring back BMX XXX, but this time put dudes in it, and everyone wins.
Yeah, certainly bring a new dimension to the helicopter trick.
Oh, well, let's move on to something a little less sexy.
Hey, listen, here's a story about a little guy that lives in a blue world.
No.
You brought it up.
No. So let's talk about Blood Bowl.
Yeah, let's talk about Blood Bowl. I don't know how much you knew about Blood Bowl before I told you it was on the list of games that I was passionate about. You know, you had your list, I had my list. Blood Bowl is a really strange game. It's like, why don't you explain it?
So Blood Bowl is it's very different from what we've talked about, because it actually started out as a tabletop game with the Warhammer universe. So it was made by Games Workshop, and so it was a fantasy football game, Warhammer. And so in 1995, Micro League publisher made a turn-based strategy game version of Blood Bowl. And so basically it is, I guess you could say similar in spirit to Mutant League Football in some ways.
It's like Mutant League Football meets Blitzball.
Yeah, so I mean, like, you have like beasts and stuff and violent, like violent injuries and maiming. But you, it's a turn-based strategy game, and like something about that just makes it, like, to me, delightfully odd, because I mean, you know, what we've tried to been highlighting here today is like sports games that do something a little different, obviously, you know, with the Game Buoy twist. And so I mean, I had heard of Blood Bowl, but when I was researching it, I'm like, wait, so it's basically literally is just a turn-based strategy game.
You see, this is why I wanted you to talk about this game, because I knew that the more you learned about it, the more you'd be like, what? So it actually released in 2007. It actually released on Nintendo DS, PSP, 360, and PC. There is a real-time game mode that strictly adheres to the Living Rulebook 5.0's pen and paper rules for the game.
That's which amazing.
Which is fantastic to me. The idea, you know, sort of similar to what BioWare did with Knights of the Old Republic and how it adheres to the D20 Star Wars role-playing book rules. That also applies here to Blood Bowl. And Blood Bowl was really well received upon release. The home versions, the 360 version in particular, unfortunately was a little bit of a shoddy port, but still a solid gameplay experience. It's really cool, you know, it's a very basic, basically it is a football game. But again, you know, like Sidekick said, there were some more like action-y elements going on based on like strategy and stuff. It's actually like a really cool game. It's a really solid like fantasy take on football.
And so I'm sorry to interject, but you were talking about the 360 release. Now you're talking about the 2009 release, right?
Oh, I'm talking about the 2009 release. Yes.
Oh, see, I'm.
Oh, you were talking about the 95 release, which is even crazier. That's because, the one that. Because yeah, that's absolutely just straight up turn based.
Okay, see, that was the one I was researching. Oops.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, well, that's cool. We're getting both angles then. Okay, so let's crowbar separation then. Blood Bowl, the 1995 PC release, which ran in DOS, is a to a fault almost authentic recreation of the board game. So much fun. It's really crazy. quite violent, but again, you know, a fantastic adaptation of turn-based football. The other one that I was talking about, you know, Nintendo DS, PlayStation Portable, PC, 360, iOS, that released in 2009 and 2014 for iOS.
By the French studio Cyanide.
But it does still have turn-based modes, and in fact, the DS version is staged as a tactics game on a grid and everything. So that's where we got a little bit off track, but both the versions of Blood Bowl, fantastic fun.
And there's a Blood Bowl
360 version, somewhat sloppy, still totally worth playing. And as Slykick says, and I was just getting to, there was a Blood Bowl 2 released on PC, PS4, and X1 on September 22nd, 2015, so just a few months ago.
That's awesome. We should check that out.
I have not played it yet, but it reviewed very highly on PC. It's supposed to be a really fun game. It's very open about being based on the Living Rulebook rules, right down to letting you see the dice rolls that are affecting your sort of various abilities and what have you. So definitely something that I'm looking forward to playing and that I will absolutely be talking about on a future episode of the show.
Oh man, why hasn't Blizzard jumped into this? I mean, I know they have PvP, but I want Orcs versus...
Because they haven't finished copying the rest of Games Workshop games yet.
Oh!
They'll get there. So that about brings us to an end of the main games we wanted to talk about, but Slaggy has something very special for all of y'all out there in internet radio land, because he loves you so much. He wants to do a sidebar, so I will give the mic to him, and I will do my best to comment only lightly.
I technically already have my own mic, so...
Just talk!
So, I wanted to do a little halftime show, but I guess it's more like the post-game show? I don't know. Okay.
What, you don't do your halftime show to popcorn?
Wait, is that a thing?
Just go. Just talk.
So I wanted to just mention a few fun, notable mini games in non-sports games that are sporty. And these are I picked a handful to talk about because we had a lot of fun doing this year. We are definitely going to consider doing a Stupid Bowls 2017 next year.
Yeah, I'll be honest. My goal is probably to do a Stupid Bowl every year and just...
Until we run out of stupid sports games.
Right? Well, hopefully they'll keep making stupid sports games.
Or else we'll have to just talk about regular sports games, God forbid.
Could you imagine us talking about Madden for an hour? That's my version of hell.
All right, so the first I want to mention is in Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars, our boy Boshi, the Blue Yoshi, and...
Whatever happened to Boshi?
I don't know. Like, he had too much batitude, I guess, but I'm, of course, talking about your race with Boshi on Yoster Isle. So, you know, very minor part of the game, but, you know, it was cute. It was like a little rhythm game.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. That was a lot of fun.
So, I mean, like, I'm just a big Boshi fan. He's like a badass blue Yoshi with sunglasses. And, you know, in the 90s, putting shades on a character made him super cool. So, Boshi, we're pouring a 40 out for you.
Hopefully he's out there on Yoster Island hanging out with Croco, and they're both master racers by now.
No, he's just working at whatever their equivalent of Walmart is.
Rude. Move on. Rude.
Now, I wanted to mention something from Final Fantasy next.
Also, no offense to anyone who works at Walmart. I shop at Walmart, and I couldn't do that without you, so I really appreciate your hard work.
I'm just saying his sports career didn't pan out.
Okay, move on.
So I want to talk about something Final Fantasy related, and you're probably thinking I'm going to talk about, you know, Final Fantasy G-Bike or Cloud Strife Extreme Snowboarding Downhill Adventure, whatever that was, and I'm not talking about Final Fantasy VII. It is pretty... It's pretty evident what I'm talking about. And it's, of course, Blitzball.
You'll get caught up in a Blitzball
match. Something that I think is really neat about Blitzball is that it's, a lot of ways, it's central to the story of Final Fantasy X. I mean, you know, they're at a Blitzball game when, you know, shit starts to hit the fan. And so Tidus, you know, is all Blitzballing it up. But then Sin, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, just the fact that Square Enix put a lot of thought into how Blitzball played in the game. I know some people couldn't stand it, but I loved it. It was, you know, basically a water polo sort of thing, but, you know, obviously being a fantasy game, there's, like, I think it had something to do with the Pyreflies, like, allowed them to be in, like, the sphere of water, and, you know, they had all these cool moves, so, I don't know, I always thought that Blitzball was cool, even if I wasn't that good at it, and I love Waka, so, of course, I had to mention Blitzball.
Yeah, I really liked Blitzball, like, it was kind of dumb, but I had a lot of fun playing it. It's basically, like, a turn-based, almost like hockey meets soccer with three-dimensional movement and, like, turn-based, like, super attacks. I was really into it, though. I really enjoyed it. You know, I've never done, like, the whole, like, do a whole season of Blitzball and get, like, the special weapon or ability or whatever. Waka. Yeah, I've never done all that. But I enjoy playing Blitzball. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I thought it was really cool. I hope Final Fantasy 15 has something like that.
Right? Oh, man. Can I just...
Maybe the boys can get into rugby or lacrosse.
Oh, hello. Can I just sidebar, like... I feel like Final Fantasy X sometimes gets a lot of flack, but I really do love that game.
You know, I don't know that I love it, but I have a great appreciation of it.
Anyway, more on Final Fantasy X some other time.
All right, we will talk about Final Fantasy X more some other time. What else do you have for us?
So I want to talk about one of the modes. So starting to get a little more obscure here, at least, I mean, in terms of the greater gaming universe. I want to talk about the Death Ball mode in the Platinum Games very underappreciated gem, Anarchy Reigns.
Yes. Or Max Anarchy, if
Max
you're in
Anarchy,
Japan.
Yeah, so, you know, Anarchy Reigns was, you know, basically beating the shit out of everything and everyone. One of the modes, it was an online mode called Death Ball, and so basically, it was kind of basically like a football game, but, you know, using these characters from Anarchy Reigns, just, you know, using their powers and beating the crap out of each other. And I had... I had so much fun. I thought the game itself was, like I said, very underappreciated, but I remember that you and I, when this first came out, we would be like playing Death Ball like every night for the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we talked about that here on the show. I know a couple of our listeners ended up buying the game because of it.
Oh, that's right. That would have been, that was in the era of Game Buoy.
Absolutely. And I still think Death Ball is fantastic. And if anyone out there in Internet Radio Land ever wants to play Death Ball, hit me up because I would definitely be down.
All right. Well, the last one I want to leave off with is from a more recent release, and it is a Zelda game. And, you know, Zelda games have... Oh, come on. You do know that a big anniversary is coming up for that franchise.
Trying not to think about it.
And, you know, Zelda's had lots of minigames over the years. There's been, like, the Epona race and stuff, but I wanted to talk about Octoball Derby from A Link Between Worlds. So it was basically a little baseball batting match with Octoroks shooting Octorok rocks at you.
Octoroks shooting Octorok rocks.
Octoroks shooting Octorok rocks. And I just, I think it's cute when, you know, I mean, I think anytime the Zelda franchise doesn't take itself too seriously, it's cute. But, yeah, I thought it was cute. I know a lot of people thought it was really irritating, but,
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. Quite predictably, you know, I actually thought that was a tremendous game, despite all my, Zelda. I had a lot of fun. I obviously love baseball. I talk about it, I feel like every episode I'm practically like, I love baseball. But, you know, I'm super into baseball, and I ended up really enjoying that game. I played it a lot.
All right.
So, yeah, I ended up really into that one, and I'm glad you brought it up here. So, is there anything else?
Well, I'd like to go to our social links question of the week right now.
Oh, fantastic idea.
I'm going to start out over on Facebook today because I feel like, you know, Facebook doesn't get enough love sometimes, and I'd like to go over there first for some of our responses.
All right.
This week, we talk... Our social links question of the week is, this week we talk sports games, bro, but not just any sports... The wacky kind. What's your favorite silly sports game? And we also asked a Facebook bonus, what silly sports idea would you like to see that has yet to be made? Mike I, also known as Act Deft, said Mega Man Soccer and Super Mario Strikers are very awesome games. Mario Tennis on the GCN is a close second. As for the crazy game idea, Splatoon is already kind of that. Good point. And you know, I like that Act Deft mentioned the Mario games. The reason we didn't include them here was largely because we just did our Ninty 90s and our Mario Mania month. But you know, the Mario sports games definitely do have like a lot of playfulness that, you know, make it kind of wackier than the usual.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I would expect to hear about those games in an upcoming Stupid Bowl episode. So, you know, maybe look forward to 2017, where we just talk about mascot sports games. We'll talk about Mario Hoops 3-on-3 featuring Final Fantasy.
Oh, man. Yeah, because we didn't spend too much time in depth on those Mario sports games.
Please look forward to it.
Yes. Remzy L said Rocket League is awesome. Also, Mutant League Hockey was great, but I'm still waiting for my rhythm-based golf RPG for Fantasy Eagle Chronicles.
I would play that every day for the rest of my life.
My thing is, can it be a canonical sequel to Final Fantasy IV the After Years called Final Fantasy IV, F-O-R-E?
Now that you've said it, I'm going to be mad forever.
Jason L., better known as Seawolf Jason, said Base Wars and Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball.
Oh, snap. Bill Laimbeer's Base Combat Basketball.
And him mentioning
Base
Wars. Oh,
man, we didn't talk about Arch Rival. Oh, so many missed opportunities.
Seawolf Jason mentioning Base Wars means that we need to play Base Wars with Seawolf Jason.
Yeah, Base Wars party, my place. Holla.
And also saying, also Mega Man Soccer, but I don't consider that a silly sports game. It's a hardcore robot sports simulator. That it is. That it is.
Oh, man.
Well, we're going to head over to the Twitter where we have some more responses. First up on the tweet sheet. I don't know what I was trying to do there.
Twiddly, twiddly, tweet, 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 sweet.
The suite of tweets? The sleet? I don't know. I'm not making sense.
Just keep going, man.
Reliable as ever, we've got your enzyme saying XXX. SSX tricky unless racing counts, then it's totally Jet Moto. And then replying a little bit later, I just thought about it more, and SSX is kind of kind of a racing game, LOL. Lil Daddy's Pizza said, Snowboard Kids is the first thing that came to
mind.
Yes! It's also a downhill snowboard racing game, LOL. Kind of tagging off of what your Einstein have said. Then Lil Daddy's Pizza saying, Jet Set Radio is my favorite sport adjacent game and favorite game in general. Take down evil corporations with sick grinds. Oh man, Jet Set Radio is just legendary.
And that's a really good call. I didn't even think about that in this context.
Yeah, I mean, Jet Set Radio. Do you know what would be like the most amazing is if Jet Set Radio and Splatoon had like a crossover game?
Well, I mean, aesthetically, they're practically the same game.
Right?
If Beat were to show up as a guest character in Splatoon, I don't think anyone would be shocked.
Hey, Mario and Sonic go to the Olympics together like every 2 years now, so stranger things have happened. And with that, we thank you for your answers to the question of the week. We'll return to those tweets and feedbacks a little bit, but we have some rumors, don't we?
Well, rumor has it, we have some rumors.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
All right. Well, several of these rumors today are not rumors per se. They're really teases coming from official sources. We have one that is a week old, one that is a day old, and one that is less than an hour old. So let's tear right into this. First up on the slate, we have a new video for Killer Instinct. This is on the official Killer Instinct YouTube channel. It's titled Halo and Killer Instinct Season 3 Tease. And the tease has a famous character from Halo 2 walking into a battlefield full of Halo enemies. If you think this is Master Chief, however, you're wrong. It is, in fact, the energy sword-wielding Arbiter. So, the implication many are taking from this is that the Arbiter is coming to Killer Instinct Season 3 as a guest character alongside the previously announced guest character, Rash, or is it Zitz from Battletoads?
Rash.
Rash. Oh, okay. So that's very exciting news. You know, I love Arbiter. I love the lore of Halo. I make no bones about it here on the show. And I love Killer Instinct. So definitely super stoked about this. Sly, you want to take the next one?
Yeah. So a certain critter mascot platformer is celebrating his 20th anniversary this year. But, you know, we haven't heard a lot from him lately until PlayStation Mideast just made a tweet just earlier this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with the way that time zones go and everything, it would be safest to just say this happened yesterday.
Happened yesterday. And it's got Crash Bandicoot, so...
Yeah, and the text translated actually roughly says, most wanted, where is he? So it's like a wanted poster for Crash, officially tweeted by PlayStation, saying, you know, he's the most wanted, where is he?
To me,
this is about as big of a hint or a tease as we're going to get, that we have new Crash coming. And since it's coming straight from, you know, the horse's mouth, I think it's pretty likely a real thing that we're going to get.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this. I didn't even like Crash back in the day.
I know.
But I, you know, at this point now, I just get giddy seeing these old faces returning, genres that haven't gotten a lot of love in decades coming back. So I'm definitely on board. I'll give Crash another chance. What about you?
Well, you know, then you're going to be really excited because... I have some exclusive news here that Sunsoft is going to be bringing back Arrow the Acrobat. I'm sorry.
You liar. Sunsoft is not bringing Arrow the Acrobat back, but if they did, I would buy it.
I got to Sunsoft, and then I couldn't.
The last one news story, the last rumor we have here is a tease from the lead writer on Titanfall 2. He states that the setting is changing a little bit, and that Titanfall 2 will portray a world in which science meets magic, but the world will still be grounded, dirty, human, and real. I saw a lot of people respond to this. This news just broke about an hour ago. I've already seen people respond to it negatively on certain message boards, but it really needs to be said, you know, in the first Titanfall game, there were several maps that took place within the skeletons of giant dragons. You could see dragons flying around up in the skybox, you know, beyond where you could interact with them. So I don't really think that it's breaking from the setting to say that, you know, we're going to start interacting with these fantasy elements that were already a part of the setting. More excitingly, he also states that there is going to be a cinematic single-player campaign, which obviously, you know, is something that people really wanted out of the first game but didn't get. And last, but definitely not least, he also mentions he believes the game will be releasing on all platforms. So this is definitely something to be excited about. If you, like myself, enjoyed Titanfall, it's definitely something I can't wait to hear more about. But until we do, I think it's time to move on, unless you have anything to say about this, Slaggy.
Nope.
Fantastic. Well then, let's talk about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Slaggy, I think I have more to talk about this week than you, so why don't you kick us off?
Sure. Well, I played a little iDarb to get ready for this episode. Had a lot of fun with that. We played a little bit of Puyo Puyo Tetris, your import. I'll let you talk a little more about that. We played a little Smash, and we played a little Diablo 3.
Excellent, excellent. Why don't you talk about Diablo 3 a little bit? We're playing on console on Xbox One.
We're playing on Xbox One, and like I said, I continue to find this to be the definitive version of the game. It's a lot more visceral for me. Like, something about, and I know that, like, blah blah blah, Diablo purists, I understand, but for me, it's, like I said, the kind of game that I had wanted Diablo to be, to the point where I was like, is there something like this but with controllers? Because that would make this game feel a lot better.
Yeah.
And we're just getting to the point where, like, we're getting sick loots and stuff, and
yeah, I've been really enjoying revisiting Diablo 3. I loved Diablo 3 on PC, but I recognize that it wasn't perfect.
I'm realizing how much I missed that first time around.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I did any enchanting the first time. Oops.
Well, you know, I think a big problem with that, well, enchanting in the context that we have it now, I don't think was present in the game when you and I played through it with my ex, in fact. And, you know, he definitely tackled this game at a different pace, I think, than we are in our current playthrough.
Yeah.
He was definitely very, go, 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 go. Don't waste a lot of time worrying about your gear, because it's all just, you know, loot farm anyway. You're not going to keep anything for very long, so why bother, you know, getting attached to gear? For me, that's not really the way I like to play this game. And, you know, a lot of these newer systems that I think have popped up in patches and the Reaper of Souls expansion, I think really go a lot further to giving you, like, epic legendary gear that you do grow attached to. You have, like, little stories about, like, oh man, this is my legendary staff that increases my fire bats for my witch doctor. And man, I remember with this staff, I was able to do 100 demon challenge, but, like, in the minute it gave me, I ended up getting down, like, 240 demons. It was so
humblebrag.
Cool. No, but I mean, it's the fact
no,
that
that's
I'm
really exciting.
The fact that I can remember a specific combat in a Diablo game for me is indicative of how positive these changes are.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not even at you know, actual expansion content either. So just,
yeah,
we,
but
we
gameplay systems. And, I mean,
rediscovering
let's
the
be
game.
Clear.
You know, I definitely there are parts I remember. Like, we're at the, like, kind of the desert-ish area now, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. But, you know, and the fact that it's a Diablo game, and, you know, at any time you go into a dungeon, it's going to be randomized. You know, that helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I'm really, really enjoying rediscovering the game. And just on, like, a story sort of note, I mean, just really appreciating what a good job they had done, Blizzard had done with Diablo 3.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so let me talk a little bit. I'm also playing Diablo 3, not going to talk about that because Slaggy just did, and I did too. I put a lot of time into Final Fantasy Explorers. This is the 3DS game that it's basically Fantasy Star Online in Final Fantasy clothes, and I mean that in the best possible way. I see it compared a lot to Monster Hunter,
yep.
But I think that that is a little bit of a less accurate description, because the real things that are emphasized and of importance in the design of Monster Hunter are just not present in Final Fantasy Explorers. Final Fantasy Explorers is way more about the gear treadmill, about getting missions, grouping up with a few of your friends in the lobby, in groups of four, and taking them on.
I wonder if that's why some people are little disenfranchised with it.
With Final Fantasy Explorers, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Because, yeah, I think people were expecting a lot more of a serious and deep game design rather than the less deep, but to me, you know, more accessible, more pick-up-and-play fun design of Final Fantasy Explorers that, to me, is very much rooted in the game design of a Phantasy Star Online experience.
Yeah, I can't wait to pick it up and join you.
Fantastic. I look forward to it. I'm having a ton of fun right now. I have a Dark Knight. I'm on, like, 5-star quests. I'm just really, really super into it. Puyo Puyo Tetris, I imported for X1. I'm pretty into it. Obviously, it's Puyo Puyo and Tetris. I really like playing the multiplayer. You can have people playing as in Puyo versus Puyo, in Tetris versus Puyo, Tetris versus Tetris. It's really fun.
Very cute, of course.
Oh, yeah, it's super, super cute. It's a really fun little game. I'm very happy I imported it. The reprinting goes for just like 25,000 yen. Goes for 2,500 yen. So
it's like $20.
Yeah, I think after shipping and stuff, I paid $26 or $27 for it. So I'm definitely very pleased with it, and I would buy it again in a heartbeat. Obviously, the PlayStation 4 and the X1 are both completely import friendly, as is the PS3. So you definitely, if you're interested, could jump on board this. AmiAmi is where I go to now for that stuff. Also, Amazon. Never play Asia. So
never.
Unless you have any other games to talk about, though, I think it's time to wrap up the social links and start up the wind down.
So I have a few more tweets to finish off. We got a series of tweets from O'Krylo going through an old, I think, gaming magazine, because the first tweet said, "Thought of GameBuoy.org when I came across this image. Hashtag Engage." It is a magazine ad for the Nokia N-Gage. Back when, you know, we made fun of Nokia for their theater earlier, but back when they were dabbling in the gaming world.
Which, remarkable, by the way. You know, that N-Gage was something else. It was hilarious.
Are we going to have an N-Gage episode?
Let's see if we can make that happen in the future.
Do you have your N-Gage still?
You know, I don't think I have a working N-Gage.
Oh, man.
So I'll have to price them and see what's up.
Yeah, so O'Krylo continuing. I want to cry. It's a magazine spread. Gaming on the go with N-Gage. And asking, does this system ring a bell? And it's the Top Wave Zodiac?
Tap Wave, I think.
Tap Wave. This font that they used in the heading. Yes, you're right, Tap Wave. The font they used in this magazine is hideous because early 2000s graphic design choices.
Well, and you know, that was actually produced by former Palm executives, like Palm Pilot and all that. So it's basically like them trying to get in on like the PlayStation Portable territory. It ended up releasing with games like Spy Hunter, Doom, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4.
Not BMX XXX though.
Not BMX XXX though. So definitely, definitely losers there. But, you know, I actually do remember it. I never had one. I saw one once. Watched the people in the store I saw it in play it a bit. But I've never seen one for sale, like, after that. And now I have money. Like, I'd buy it if I could. So, man, you know, O'Krylo, you probably just put me on the track to buy a Zodiac. Thanks.
And starting the wrap-up of his adventures here, tweets you down to the both of us. It's another N-Gage ad. Are you ready to have a threesome in the back of a cab? Sorry, Captain Spike, but I'm not going to have a threesome with you, but O'Krylo, let's talk.
Oh, hey, hey.
And then O'Krylo had one more saying, what is this? It's the Vectrex 3D Imager.
Yeah, that one, I have no idea.
We'll have to do some research in. You know, I love learning more about these, like, weird, obscure little devices and stuff. We have to do an episode about the Apple Bandai Pippin sometime.
Can we do a Pippin? Yes, we do.
Back on January 25th, when we had posted our last episode, Generation X-Wing, episode 101, Little Daddy's Pizza said, looks like I have a new GameBuoy.org to listen to tomorrow. Gonna have to put ANTM on pause for a bit. Oh, you paused Miss Tyra for us? I'm speechless. So that wraps up our social media responses for the time being, but it goes without saying at this point that we love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We appreciate when you tune in to us over on Stitcher Radio. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
Oh, we have the explicit tag.
Saying effing. Okay, gosh.
I do too. You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And our complete episode archive is available at gamebuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Captain Spike, why don't you give us some shout-outs?
Well, as ever and always, my first shout out goes to VogNetwork.com, where you can hear shows such as Girls Gone Wow and Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I personally steal ever so many of my cues. Also appearing on VogNetwork.com sometime in the coming weeks is Ranger Pridecast, the show on which I appear, where Shane Alenko and I discuss the various Mighty Morphin Power Rangers series, as well as the Super Sentai series upon which they're based. I think maybe another show that you've probably heard before, and maybe you're listening to right now, could possibly also be appearing on VogNetwork.com at some point in the future.
Oh my!
You should also check out Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I'd also be remiss not to mention the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail.
Another great VOG show.
Which is, in fact, on VOG Network. And Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Last but never ever least is Slaggy's other show, Reading is Fundamental, a seasonal show looking at what's going on in the world of RuPaul's Drag Race when it is currently on season, which means it should be coming back soon.
Yep, we got the season 8 cast reveal, so we're putting together our episode 0 right now.
Fantastic
news. Look
for
that in the next week or so.
That also features myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness, which I think Slaggy is about to take us to. Slaggy?
Yes. So I want to tell you about this bunch of folks called the Hunty Bunch. You know, we really value the tight-knit indie podcasting community, particularly those of us who represent the LGBT community as well. And that, of course, includes VG Realness, who serve up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. We're honored that Delvin is one of our librarians on Reading is Fundamental.
We heart you.
And we love to take you to a game bar. Actually, we won't do that, but Jeremiah, Toopsie, and Todd will do that. They are the Gay Video Game Prairie Home Companion and a part of our Hunty Bunch, along with Koopa Club, an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. I believe the award was from their mothers. I'd like to also mention La Palanca Podcast, a podcast por y para gay gamers Latino Americanos in Espanol, and also the Joystick Jockeys, DJ and Ruben, two QT LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them. And I'd be remiss not to mention our buddies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. And, also, if you like the animes, then you might want to check out this little show called Anime Buoy. It's your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I believe the hosts, Captain Spike and First Mate Slagkick.
I'll be honest, I expected you to take that to a SPIAC place.
Oh, like the cookie cake.
Yeah, keep on going.
I believe they will be talking about Martian's successor Nadesco next episode, so please look forward to that. Also, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated. You know, we've shouted them out ever so many times. They were just a great project, made that beautiful symphonic Zelda sound, and we're forever pouring out a 40 in the Great Fairy Fountain. Thank you for most people who listen now probably associate that with Game Buoy more than Wind Waker, or maybe I'm just being arrogant.
You being super arrogant, even though, you know, people have actually told you that.
People have told me that. Now, why don't you tie things up? I think we need to get some cookie cake now.
We sure do. All right. Well, you know, this has been an episode.
We don't actually have cookie cake. It's a tragic shame.
I've had a fantastic time talking to y'all today. I've had a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Who thought talking about sports would be this much fun?
Right? I hope you've had half as much fun listening to this episode as we've had making it. We will be back with you in another 2 weeks. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And unme no EQ.
Yeah, I don't understand your obscure references sometimes.
It was the episode title to an episode of Ace of Diamond.
I don't understand your obscure references.
Okay, no, but talking to your mic, I'm trying to do a mic check.
Floppy bulge, floppy bulge. Show me that bulge. Gamebuoy.org. Ahoy, mateys.
Mics are hot. Mics are hot.
Mics are hot.
Ooh la la. I have all my follow-ups open.
I got all my follow-ups with me.
Are you ready?
Yes.
It just feels appropriate.
Sorry, unsung story. Your story is over.
Are you RuPaul right now? Because that was quality.
Can I get that as a audio clip, please?